Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, your reactions to the various primary election results yesterday. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. I guess we start at the top with the governor's race. And a pretty impressive spread, I would say, for Darren Bailey, exceeding even my expectations a little bit. But it's funny how momentum works. Once you get that ball rolling downhill, it picks up speed. And so I told you, our audience here, that about a week before the election, Darren Bailey had opened up a 22-point lead. Well, he turned that 22-point lead into a 40-point victory.
Wow. All right. Congratulations to him and all the candidates last night, including Richard Ervin, said that they were going to be supporting him in the general election. And they all gave wonderful concession speeches. I was shocked, though, that Ervin admitted that he's going to help Bailey.
Historic amount of money to choose his own Republican opponent in the general election. And listen, I wish Darren Bailey well as he moves on to the general election. I wish him well.
Are they saying Bailey or Ervin?
And listen, I hope this governor is wrong in his assessment that he can easily defeat the opponent he paid tens of millions of dollars to face. But if this governor is correct, and if he does easily prevail, we as citizens must rise up. My friends, Pritzker stopped us from winning tonight, but he couldn't stop us from changing so many hearts and minds around the state. People are fed up with the crime and the taxes and the corruption. And I believe that they are ready to rise up and take back Illinois.
And so this morning he wakes up going back to being full-time mayor of Aurora.
Yeah, for now. That's not why Darren right. Bailey won, and it's not why Richard Ervin lost. I understand. You need a cover story. The establishment, the Combine Republicans, they're going to need a big cover story. I get they're going to go with the Pritzker DGA money for Richard Ervin, who finished third, as I told you he would. Third. $50 million.
For third place?
Yeah.
Do you get a participation medal when you come in third?
I suppose it's the least you should get for $50 million. But now you know why Ken Griffin was hightailing out of town before, you know, didn't want to be in the blast zone, as I said.
I wonder if he even voted.
The larger point, though, about last night is it was a repudiation of the combined Republicans in this state up and down the ballot. A repudiation of the men and women of always in this super minority party, and they're the reason it is, up and down the ballot. Darren Bailey and the rest of Ervin Slate, Dan Brady, 75-25 over Millhiser. Hey, John Millhiser, you know, sometimes you want to stay in your lane. And I would say the same thing about DuPage County State Attorney Bob Berlin. If you don't know much about politics, just be a law enforcement official or axe someone who's not using you as a pawn to, you know, prop up this handsome looking ticket. And that's all it is. John Millhiser, who's I don't know him particularly well. I think I've talked to him once or twice. Former U.S. attorney for the Central Illinois.
Would not come on the show on
it. 75-25 gets washed out by a journeyman I would call him, even though I personally like him, but a journeyman, sort of company man, state rep from Bloomington. Because what happened? What happened was what I told you would happen, slate mates of Richard Irvin. There's not going to be any money left for you if it turns into a highly competitive race. And what happened? There was no money left for you when it became a highly competitive, and then for Richard Irvin, uncompetitive race. And so nobody knew who John Millhiser was, and Brady's a good ballot name. Plus, you know, as I said, been around for a long time, and there's been Brady's on the ballot for a long time at the statewide level. So there you go. Steve Kim. First we tried with Rutherford, now we tried with Irvin. Always ready to fold in to be a stand-in for whatever office they'll slot you for. Lieutenant Governor, AG. That doesn't work anymore. Bye. Sorry. And this is not me gloating. This is me describing. This is me saying the things that I've been saying for the better part of, 15 years since I ran for governor and lost. And now I think most of the Illinois Republican Party, the rank and file, the actual human beings, not the cardboard cutout human beings in office, I think they're wise to it. Keith Pikow.
He won, yep, handily.
Keith Pikow for the 6th Congressional. Oh, by the way, we'll get to it. The legislative races? Oh, boy. Those political geniuses that have the House and Senate Republicans in the super minority playing the same identitarian politics, the same we're going to pantomime the Democrat socialist politics that they've always played when they weren't called Jim Durkin, they were called Tom Cross. When they weren't called Dan McConkie, they were called Bill Brady or Christine Rodonio. Facsimiles of the same people doing the same thing. Different results. Different results. We got something going here, and I thought Darren Bailey spoke to it nicely in his victory speech last night. You got a movement going. You have the revolt finally happening. And we'll get to it because, as I mentioned over the last couple shows, I've got polling in the general election, and it's very winnable. And I'm going to release it so that people can digest it and people can share it, because of course the same Chicago Springfield political press corps that was ridiculing Darren Bailey, that was ridiculing me, that was ridiculing my friend Brian Timpone, they're going to ridicule the notion that Darren Bailey can beat Pritzker, just as they began accepting the premise that the primary was going to be a Richard Irvin coronation. It's not. Not if Darren runs the right campaign. But the landscape says what it says, and the landscape says that basically the generic ballot is a dead heat. Basically, the general election is a dead heat, and it's going to be a slog.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Pritzker kicked off his campaign last night. 21-minute speech talking about Bailey. It's not a race against Bailey. It's a race against Trump.
Right.
Let me be clear. Someone who seeks out and accepts the endorsement of a racist, misogynistic, homophobic, xenophobic, twice-impeached former president does not deserve to come anywhere near this state's highest office.
Don't even look at me.
Right. So that's going to be the challenge. For the
ads will be out today.
That's going to be the challenge for the Bailey campaign, is to make this a referendum on the incumbent, which elections normally are. And because this incumbent, Jelly Belly, has failed, because 60% of Illinois thinks Illinois is on the wrong track, general election electorate. That's the definition of failure if you're the chief executive. 60% of the electorate says we're on the wrong track. Because Joe Biden is upside down in a state that he won by 17 points, J.B. Pritzker has to make this about Trump. And, you know, Bailey is a
farmer versus a billionaire.
No, that's not what he's going to make it. It's J.B. Pritzker versus Trump, as you just said.
Right. Yeah.
That's what he's going to make it. And so Bailey's challenge is to make this a referendum on the actual performance of Illinois under J.B. Pritzker and his policies. That's the challenge.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
Tom in Blue Island.
Dan and Amy, good morning. Dan, it's the only ones are, that are surprised are the ones that don't listen to AM 560 and are willing to believe that this day of COVID and the day of stolen elections has started to recede now. Bailey is going to beat Pritzker, and they're going to be just as surprised, Dan, and he's going to beat him by a couple of points, and it's going to be because of exactly what you and Amy have said, what you guys have been fighting for the last couple of years. This isn't going to, this isn't shocking, and when he beats Pritzker, it's going to be because America is back.
Thanks for the call, Tom. Appreciate it. Another, just to my point about the repudiation of the compromised combine surrender Republicans, Mary Miller beating Rodney Davis in Central Illinois, also Trump endorsed.
Yeah.
Mark, Southside.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Dan, I think Pritzker is very vulnerable, and the reason I say that is I went and looked at the 2018 primary results. In that year, there was 1.3 million Democratic ballots cast compared to 700,000 for the Republicans. Yesterday, there was 800,000 Democratic ballots cast compared to 765,000 for the Republicans, a difference of 35,000 votes.
Mm-hmm.
They lost a 500,000 votes compared to 2018 on the Democratic side.
Well, yeah, thanks for the call, Mark. Although 2018, they had a competitive primary and at the top of the ticket, meaning for governor, in 2022, they didn't. So what I will say, though, is I think you're onto something when you talk about the enthusiasm that those numbers suggest, that there is much more enthusiasm among Republicans and, frankly, center-right-leaning independents. And by the way, among independents generally right now, Bailey owns independents over Pritzker at this moment.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today, 773-467-5630. 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender. Signature Bank.
The answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, talking about last night's election results, of course. Taking your calls, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. The top line, at least for me, and I think there's a lot of evidence to support the statement, is that the cowardly combine Republicans who are in charge of the party, such as it exists in this state, were repudiated. Those cowardly combine Republicans that have the Republican Party in the superminority were repudiated up and down the ballot, starting with the Irvin statewide slate going up like a Roman candle, but including Mary Miller for Congress, including Keith Pikow for Congress, including the state legislative races where Jim Durkin got his ass handed to him in primaries all over the state. And Dan McConkie also fell prey to the same poisonous thinking and got embarrassed in a state Senate race where he played the identitarian game. This is down in Will County, and his candidate lost 80-20.
Wow.
I tell you what, 80-20, when you're the leader of a caucus and you choose to get involved in a primary, which is something you may or may not consider doing, or you can do what Durkin does, is lie about it and then get involved. We can't get involved in primaries and then get involved. You can do that too, to your detriment, it turns out. But you recruit candidate, you put candidate up, and you lose 80-20 in a race that you say, well, this is a pickup opportunity in the general, then you're in the wrong business.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. I just wanted to, you know, Gary Rabine put up a heck of a fight. His heart was in the right place, and he delivered his concession speech pretty early last night.
So I sincerely want to thank everyone here, the loving friends that I've gained. I got to tell you, I've got so many loving friends that I can look around this room that I didn't have before this election. People that want to stand up in Illinois along with me. We've traveled our great state. Now we've got a clear picture on the pain our families, like I said, are suffering. And we're going to clean it up. I believe our team worked harder than any other team. So when we look at the money spent, $120, $130 million on this campaign, we spent about $4 million. So that'd be about what? 2.5, maybe less than 3% of the vote is what we should expect for the money spent. I think we're going to do a lot better than that because of the team and the strength of our team.
And then he went on to say, you know, he's not done with politics yet. He might run for another office in the future.
I remember when $4 million was a lot and to have on hand in a statewide primary in Illinois. That was about 10 times more than I had 14 years ago, 13 years
right.
ago. But
Well, the Ad Impact said that this was the most expensive primary in U.S. history.
Well,
$114 million spent from both parties.
When you start with $50 million from one guy for one candidate, you know it's going to be an unusual primary, and it certainly was.
Yeah.
But it's a reminder, too, something for people worried about, Ken Griffin's gone. I mean, I know these cowardly combine Republicans are worried about it because they're welfare queens. I know that, So, and how is Darren Bailey going to compete with J.B. Pritzker's money? Well, which is what I tried to tell people making the same argument on behalf of Richard Irvin in the primary. Ken Griffin is a very, very rich man, but he's not the only one with an interest in politics. We had billionaires backing three different candidates in the Republican primary. And you don't have to go dollar for dollar. You certainly didn't with Richard Irvin, as you all saw now. And you don't have to go dollar for dollar with J.B. Pritzker if he wants to spend the entirety of his inheritance to try to get reelected so that he can run for president and continue to feed his delusions. You have to have the money to compete, and Darren Bailey will.
Talk about feeding delusions. Last night in his 21-minute speech, he kept talking about how great he did with COVID. Raise the minimum wage, was successful with COVID. And that's pretty much it. And then, of course, everything's about abortion, 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 abortion. Real quick, we got to give him due. Jesse Sullivan, I think he had a higher turnout or more votes than Richard Irvin, which was a big accomplishment.
Call to tell him, hey, if I have to lose, I want to lose to a man of faith. I want to lose to a man who's going to bring these conservative values to Illinois. So he is a man of faith. He is a man of conservative values. Now it's all of our job to get behind Darren and make sure that we go and try to beat J.B. Pritzker in this general election.
That's nice.
No,
it's good.
It's solid. That was gracious. I mean, all the candidates were gracious. Irvin, the least gracious,
right,
because he needs to, you know, provide the cover story for what happened. I understand that, but at least he wished Darren well. And so that's fine. Look. The general
he said he's going to get behind him, but I doubt that.
Well, whatever.
If he does, great.
We'll see. I'll repeat this. This is a coalition of the willing. You want to take your ball and go home. You want to rationalize inaction by saying, no, Darren Bailey can't win, this and that. Well, okay. We don't have time for it. We don't have time to deal with thumbsuckers and bedwetters. You got 4 months. So it's a coalition of the willing. Whoever wants to carry the fight to the other side, That's open door, whether that's in donor capacity, volunteer capacity. Bygones are bygones. That's how it's got to be. That's how the game works. And that's how the process works. I mean, I don't really consider it a game. I shouldn't use that word. That's how the process works if you want to be successful. So it's an open door to anybody that wants to join the fight. And if you don't, that's fine, too.
Oh, we have to get to Darren Bailey.
We'll get to him.
Okay.
John in Villa Park.
Thank you.
Hey, good morning, Dan. Everything you said coming back from the break is just great news, and I'm just going to remain hopeful before I get too excited. But 2 years ago, you asked what the paradigm shift was, and hopefully this applies. And I'll tell you, for me, I'll never vote for an establishment type of Republican again. They got to be a strong conservative, because after Trump, that's what shifted for me. That's where I saw something that I really wanted to see, and just the regular Republicans are never going to do it again for me, ever.
Thanks for the call, John. Chris on the Dan Ryan.
Hey, Dan. Congratulations on your predictions. They're pretty damn good. I just want to say real quickly is that if Darren Bailey wants to win, he needs to really pound the hell out of Pritzker with his gas taxes and his raising of property taxes. He's got to get on top of that topic. You know, the whole COVID thing, you can go either way, whatever. You're either going to be for COVID or against COVID, whatever the case may be. But he's got to really get them on those taxes, because I'm telling you right now, you know, 38 cents a gallon, now that I'm driving in and out of work, we're going back to work, we're going into Chicago again, that adds up, and I've had to cut back quite a bit because of my lovely Democratic governor and my lovely Democratic president. That's really all I have to say. Have a good morning.
Thanks for the call, Chris.
Yeah, everyone's got to cut something back. Those
are very good instincts. Chris on the Dan Ryan just shared, those are very good instincts. I hope Darren Bailey was listening, because he's right. Chris on the Dan Ryan is right over the target. Mike in Plano.
Hey, guys. You know, out here in Kendall County, I thought it was a really good night, and I'm actually more excited to vote for the Republican ticket this year than in previous years as far as state and local offices. It was fun watching Richard Irvin get embarrassed by Bailey, and we also got to see Jed Davis knock off David Welter for the state rep
office.
And
huge.
Yeah, big. And that's the thing, too, because Welter for years ran out here on a pose. I didn't think people out here paid attention to him, but it gives me hope, because apparently people were seeing what he was doing and pay attention to his voting record and finally threw him out. And as far as the District 14 race, I was a Coolidge guy and Grider beat him, but I'll vote for Grider. I think he's going to be actually a decent candidate to go against Underwood, especially since he's younger and he seems to articulate a lot better than Overweis did. And Overweis was pretty unpopular out here anyway, because he kept running for office and losing. And that leads me to my next point. I'm getting tired of watching Jim Martyr run, because he always runs for federal office, and Andy loses. Andy takes votes away from more formidable candidates that can knock off an establishment incumbent type out here that we just can't have representing this area anymore. I just want to hear what your thoughts were on that, Dan.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Well, let's start with the Welter race. And Jed Davis beat incumbent David Welter down in that LaSalle Grundy area handily, 58-42. I knew David Welter from early on when he was a young guy. I think he started at the county board before he moved over to state rep. Another case of a young guy who got Springfield-ified, just like you see people like Aaron Schock or Adam Kinzinger get DC-ified. A lot of promise, a lot of talk of conservatism. Then he started to get status thrown at him by these cowardly combine Republicans. And he started to be a creature of the rail in Springfield rather than of his district. And it finally caught up to him. And good for Jed Davis for running. And good for the people in that district, the Republicans in that district, saying, no, we can do better, because you can. I'm sorry, he disqualified himself with terrible votes on a range of issues, folding in with where Jim Durkin says the wind is blowing. Well, Durkin walked for David Welter, spent $70,000. Unions came in with another $150,000. I mean, this is how Springfieldified did David Welter get? Democrat Socialist Senator Heather Staines gave David Welter $5,000.
Really?
But tell me there's no combine. And tell me that wow. under Jim Durkin, the House Republican caucus isn't a surrender caucus. Of course it is. Don't be ridiculous. And so he Durkin got hammered. And Durkin, and that's not the only one. I won't go through them all in detail, but.
What other one?
A big one in Southern Illinois. Cordy beats Hackler. Cordy beats Hackler. Jim Durkin with Hackler. PACs and unions spent more than $200,000 on the Durkin backed Hackler. Cordy beat him more than 2-1. Connie Kane against Thrower. Durkin with Thrower, Connie Kane wins. Scott Green, Donna Ruiz. Scott Green over Donna Ruiz. Durkin back Donna Ruiz. A Hauter versus Burris. Durkin with Burris, Hauter wins. John Cabello in Rockford ran against local 150 candidate, 3-1. Weaver versus Luft in 93. Luft backed by Durkin, Weaver wins. Tipsword, four-way primary. Durkin affiliates put $100,000 in for Rutherford's former chief of staff, Kyle Hamm, lost. We could go on, and I mentioned the Senate race in Will County for Dan McConkie. Dan McConkie back candidate, Katrina Vella, losing 4-1.
Wow.
So, you get what I'm saying when I say repudiation? It wasn't just the top of the ticket. It's up and down the ticket. And that's good news because it signals sort of what John from Villa Park was saying. Finally, a paradigm shift within the Republican ranks. And you have to recapture the Republican Party and imbue it with meaning, rebrand it, reintroduce it, and mean it. Be a conservative reform party that's going to keep your word if you were handed the reins of power, or even if you're position was improved. You're going to put in those fights. Now we have that opportunity. Well, not quite, but soon we will. Tony in Downers Grove.
Hey, Dan. You know, it's great that there's a shift, and it's great that Bailey won, but if we can't get out the people to vote, because this turnout was pitiful.
20% in the city.
They're not going to win anything.
Well,
so
we need to move the primary back to March, by the way.
Yeah, I mean,
nobody's here. Everyone's on vacation. The turnout
was actually pretty good, all things considered. You have to include early voting, and early voting was up over 4 years ago, and so it's spread out. But the total in an anomalous primary in late June, I'm not too concerned about the turnout, and I think the intensity and the enthusiasm is only going to increase over the next 4 months as you move to a national election, essentially, on November 8th. So I wouldn't worry about that. Thanks for the call, Tony. I mean, you worry about it. You got to do the work to get out the vote. But the idea that Republicans and other people being hurt by the policies of Democrat socialists aren't motivated, I don't think the turnout said that.
According to the Sun-Times, record low 20% voter turnout, lowest for midterm primary since 2014.
So?
Why did we move it to June anyway?
Because they
so
want to
Pritzker
shorten,
wanted short,
shorten the general election
general
cycle.
Election, yeah.
John in Naperville.
Yeah, between now and November, every single Republican from dog catcher to governor has to be on the exact same message. Just pound the Democrats on their failure. Every single stop, mention every single name of a child that was killed in Chicago. Mention the gas taxes. And they come up with solutions and hammer them over and over. If the GOP has a consistent message with everybody on board singing the same thing, I think they're going to do it. The thing that happened why a lot of these conservatives won is because the educated people that know what they're going to do and know what they stand for voted. Now they have to educate the rest of the state.
Thanks, Sean.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today. 773-467-5630. 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Signature Bank.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Of course, our top story this morning is yesterday's primary elections. And we're taking your calls, get comments on the results from the top of the ticket to the bottom, your locality or statewide, whatever you'd like to address, whatever you thought you saw. And also, too, sort of strange happenings at a polling place. I mean, I heard.
What did you hear?
One guy emailed me. A relative of his went to vote in Burbank, and his relative was asked for a paper ballot in English. We only have paper ballots in Polish and Spanish. If you want to vote in English, you have to use the touchscreen.
Yeah. Well, I had to use a touchscreen. I vehemently opposed touchscreens. You don't have a choice.
No, but how do you have only paper ballots only in Spanish foreign languages and not English? I mean, it's fine to have them in Polish and Spanish too, but I can't get a paper ballot in English? What? Okay.
When I voted, it was electronic. Right. It was touchscreen, but then it printed out your ballot. And then you take the ballot over to the lady who writes something on top of it and feeds it in.
I understand, but...
And there was nobody there.
That still doesn't explain to me how I can only request a paper ballot in a language I don't speak. You know, for like... 95% of us here in Chicago. It seems a bit odd to me, but you know,
it does.
Okay. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. Of course, the headline from last night was Darren Bailey's resounding victory in the Republican gubernatorial primary.
They say our fate's set. No! That a farmer can't beat a billionaire. Friends, the funny thing is, these same people said that we couldn't win the primary. We were outspent by tens of millions of dollars in the primary, and look what happened tonight. This is how it's done.
And it was real sweet because Darren Bailey came home to vote, and he voted in his old elementary school gym, and he came out, and he got a little emotional. It was really sweet because he worked hard. I mean, he was the first one in. He's the first one to push back against Pritzker. He sued him for the mask mandates and for shutting down businesses, and I'm going to support him 100%.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro. Answer line, Chet and Lyle.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Yesterday's results should really be encouraging to anybody who is considering running for local office next April, that they too can make a difference if they go on offense, focus on principles, and focus on the results of the people they challenge. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Chad. And let me include some people that operate below the fold who were instrumental in what happened yesterday, too. So Jeannie Ives was riding point on supporting a lot of these conservative reform state legislative candidates, particularly in the House,
right,
against the Durkin-backed candidates, whether they were incumbents or open seats. So the throttling that those Durkin-backed back candidates, and by extension, he took yesterday, was significantly at the hands of Jeannie Ives. Restoration PAC, which is Doug Truax's PAC, it's a federal PAC, focused on federal races, state, Senate, and congressional races around the country, but including in Illinois. They came in with a ad buy for Keith Peacow in June, which I think was instrumental in separating Peacow from Grasso and allowing him to have a victory going away last night. So, you know, this is I'm glad Chet mentioned that, because the idea that you, if you want to run for local office or you want to run for legislative office, that you have to go genuflect before the likes of Jim Durkin, of all things, or Dan McConkie, these incompetent and cowardly leaders, in quotation marks. Maybe there'll be changes in those positions in the not too distant future. We'll see. But just for what the landscape is today, and frankly, for what it is even when those two are gone, you don't have to do that. They're, first of all, they mainly just lie to you. They mainly just make commitments that they don't keep. And we've had House and Senate Republican leaders doing that for some time. And if you don't believe me, go ask some local Republican candidates who've run for legislative office and had the backing of the House or the Senate Republicans and how that experience was for them. I know, since I've been involved in this quite intimately for a long time, I got a pretty good list of people that I could provide in terms of testimony if you'd like to hear it. You don't need to do that, because you have Jeannie Ives doing her thing with Breakthrough Ideas and working with other people on legislative races, because you have Truax and his team working on federal races and supporting good congressional candidates like Peacow, and because you have, well, not to be braggadocious, but because you have me doing my thing with my team and other allies focusing on statewide races, the governor's race in particular. And ultimately, as I've said before, when I started this PAC, I want to get to school board races in Illinois, but not limited to Illinois. So there are allies out there if you want to be a serious person and a conservative reform candidate and run for office for the purpose of winning and actually advancing the flag of conservative reform, and then maybe serving for a while and going back to do what you were doing before, do something else that's interesting. There are people there to help. So you don't have to just sit around and wait to be anointed by these people who have no clue what they're doing other than trying to stick around so they can line their own pockets. It's important to note that. And yesterday was a tribute to that reality. Larry in Logan Square, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, thank you very much. You know, the Illinois corrupt culture really starts at the U.S. Senate seat. That is what we, you know, should be focusing on. And putting somebody as, you know, Ms. Salvi, which is a party person, you know, I'm not sure if she, you know, will be as strong as maybe Peggy Hubbard, but she is who she is, and we need to unite. But I wish the real Republican Party is really selling off that seat, because they're giving to the corrupt Democrats. We'll leave the U.S. Senate seat alone so we all could play in the same sandbox together.
Well, thanks for the caller. I mean, you know, Kathy Salvi, this is how it works. If you want support, you have to prove up that you can be competitive, that you have a shot, that you have a campaign that's going concern, that you're hitting certain milestones. That's for everybody around the country. If you want support from the Senate Republican Campaign Committee, if you're running for U.S. Senate, if you want support from the Republican Governors Association, if you're running for governor, if you're the nominee. So, you know, you got to prove up. And that includes Bailey. And I want to get to some numbers on the governor's race, too, because they're statewide numbers, and they're indicative of where the opportunities are, not just statewide, but also for these opportunities to pick up congressional seats in, like, the 6th and the 11th and the 14th, as well as legislative seats to narrow those super majorities Chicago Democrats enjoy and at least get them to minorities, particularly in the House, so that, for example, Governor Bailey, if he was successful, would have a little bit more room to work and a few more people with whom to work. Tracy in the Western Burbs.
Yeah. I worked in Central DuPage County as a judge, and people were surprised they could pull a Republican ballot if they had voted Democratic the last time. Hmm. And they pulled a lot of Republicans.
People flipping over, and your sense was they're not trying to select their Republican. They were fleeing the Democrat Party?
Yeah, actually, most of them were saying, oh, I can vote Republican. I'm so frustrated with the other side. And a lot of negatives for Pritzker.
That's encouraging. Thanks for the call, Tracy. Appreciate it. Craig in Mount Greenwood.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy, and thanks for taking my call, Dan. Hey, you're exactly right about things changing and this thing being different, because I'll tell you something, I got family members and friends that never had any interest in these primaries, really politics in general, not talking about anything, and they know what's going on. And this thing with this Irvin, he was basically doing that projection, and these, we all realize it, we all see it. That's why it isn't business like usual when they lie to us. He's left this lie, and, oh, yeah, Irvin talking about getting rid of corruption and stuff like that. What the heck? He's part of the corruption. He's a total corrupt. And, I mean, that, and we all see it. No one we're talking about. I got my kids even calling me, telling me about who to vote for and everything and on the right side. So this is all different. We're going into to some really good times here with people knowing what's going on. Thanks. Really engaged.
Thanks for the call, Craig. Jim and Lyle.
Hey, Dan. Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning, Amy. I'm actually down here in Effingham celebrating.
Oh, good. Where did he have it? Did he have his thing at the Firefly? Where was it?
I don't know.
No, not at the Firefly. It was at a convention, like Banquet Hall. I forget the name of it.
It was in Effingham.
But Firefly is the restaurant to go to in Effingham.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's a great place.
Yeah.
That's a great place. But what I'm calling for is, I think I don't want to have overlooked the masterstroke that Darren did in picking my friend and Lyle neighbor, Ms. Trussell.
Oh, his running mate, Stephanie Trussell, right.
Stephanie Trussell is a grade A1 candidate that is just phenomenal. He couldn't have picked a better person, and I think she's going to help trim the margins in northeastern Illinois in November.
Okay. All right. Thanks for the call, Jim.
Yeah, she spoke last night before he went on.
Team effort, yeah, right. Sean and Darian. Sean, Darian?
Yes. Oh, hi.
Hey.
Yeah, hey, I love you guys. You guys do a great job getting the information out there for us. I just started following politics, you know, when Trump got in.
Uh-huh.
And these local politicians, you know, like Durkin and stuff, you know, I'm raising my kids, we're working, me and my wife, so we don't pay attention to all that. So how do I know, I mean, would you have a list of these people that we should not be voting for on these local races, and or a list of who we should vote for, my question.
Well, now I have a list of people not to vote for. They're the ones with D's next to their name. So that's straightforward.
That's your first hint.
But yeah, I hear what you're saying, local races that are nonpartisan races. You know, we got to do something like a list or some sort of forum for candidates to help, I think, distill some of these races for people, because obviously I get a lot of questions. We get a lot of questions about who to vote for in this race and that race. I don't have anything like a master list, but
it would be helpful, because then I served within some of these guys that were on the polls, like Durkin and stuff, and I realized, listen, that the guy's a slime ball, right?
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And I mean, it'd be better just not to even circle his name at all, obviously, right?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, right. There's no choice there, so it's you know,
well, if you could get a list, I would love to get it, honestly.
All right, we'll work on it. Thanks for the call, Sean. Appreciate it.
And who won the 11th district? Is it
11 was
to go against Foster.
Yeah, it was Catalina Lauf. I don't know if it's been declared, but she's up, right? I mean, it's basically over.
She is up by about 5,000 votes, with about 96% of the vote in and tabulated right now.
Yeah, I mean, so you would think it's highly likely she's the nominee.
Okay.
Tony, Colorado Springs.
Hey, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I flew in yesterday from Colorado Springs.
To vote, and yesterday was actually my very first time in voting in the primary, Republican primary or elections in Illinois after I voted for Trump in 2020. We're all involved, and this time is different, and we're committed. Darren Bailey should be the next governor, and we're tired. We're just tired and frustrated. Go through the airports, go through anywhere in the United States, you see frustration in people's faces. And hopefully, come November, it will be different.
All right.
Well, welcome.
Stick around, Tony. Yeah, we're going to need you. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
To vote. Now, that's a true patriot right there.
Frank, Arlington Heights.
Good for him.
Hey, good morning. Excellent victories last night. And I think it shows, too, that, you know, since Bailey won so, you know, astoundingly, and DeVore and Pikow, they were all front and center on the Pritzker COVID response. They all fought him tooth and nail, and you know, the people rewarded them, and huge wins. And I think that shows that you know, Pritzker is definitely vulnerable because of that. People were really upset about that. I also think inflation was a big issue, but you know, inflation is an issue for people. But I've been thinking about this. Inflation is an issue not just because of the inflation and the gas prices, but because President Biden seems to have such a visceral disdain for the American people. He's so grumpy and ornery, and he just seems to be working against us deliberately. So I think he should be tied like a millstone around JB. And, you know, it was a great night last night watching all the returns come in. And District 25 out here, they had a referendum for $75 million for a full day kindergarten. Right now it's losing by about 60 votes with four precincts left. So that's encouraging, too. I mean, that's usually out here we approve every referendum.
Right.
But, you have a referendum that could very well lose if those four precincts come in the right way. So,
thanks.
Anyway, great night. Great job, Dan. Great job, Amy.
Thanks for the call, Frank.
In the 14th Congressional District in that primary, Grider. Yeah, he's winning.
Yeah.
It's going to be Grider.
Vince in St. Charles.
Good morning, guys. There was one of the ads I noticed about Pritzker. He said about the roads. He gets together with the Republicans, of course. Yeah. Okay, the roads that they're doing are like overpasses, outdated overpasses and interchanges. The roads are horrible. If you ever drive Cook County, I know you have.
Yeah.
But Cook County, locally, 25th, Mannheim, they're a joke. I mean, so
how about the expressways? I mean,
oh
I know
gosh,
there's been some
horrible
resurfacing on the Kennedy, but I mean, you drive on the Dan Ryan. I mean, until recently, 57. It's like Mad Max stuff. I mean, I need some like urban assault vehicle to avoid the potholes and the cracks and everything else.
Inbound Kennedy near Addison is horrible.
Being fixed.
Not to mention the gunfire.
Yeah, that's true.
Nothing's being fixed. Just that some overpasses and interchanges. That's all they're doing. The right lane going to North Avenue is 290. You have to stand up, otherwise my back takes a beating. You get to the left lane. It's a joke. When the water comes and the rain comes, all the asphalt comes out, and then the holes start. So not doing low
roads. Bricks are falling off bridges.
Thanks for the call, Vince. Well, I mean,
and McCormick Place.
And here's the thing, you know, the trades that Pritzker tried to buy off with his $43 billion capital bill. So, you know, probably the leadership of those trade unions will go with Pritzker because of the capital bill. But the rank and file is a different story. I wonder where rank-and-file operating engineers and carpenters and plumbers and pipe fitters are going to be. You really going to be with the guy who had, I guess, some
shut
of these tradesmen? Well, not really shut you down, but, I mean, this is somebody who you think is really aligned with your interests because they pass a capital bill to buy you off. Are you going to be like a surrender Republican and sell your soul that cheaply? Or are you going to do what you know is right? That aligns with who you are as a person, who your family is as a family. That's the challenge that needs to be put to the rank and file members of the trades. Because Bailey's not anti-union. And Bailey obviously worked all his life with his hands, oh, by the way. So he gets it. You're really going to throw in because of a capital bill? I understand that's what your leadership will tell you and that a lot of these guys go wherever their leadership says, but it's a secret ballot. Don't surrender who you are in this state because that's how we got to this place.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, for pro-lifers worried about the impact of the Dobbs decision on the election. Don't worry, we've got messengers like the big guy and Reparation H that are coming to the rescue. I mean, if you want to destroy your position on an issue, have Kamala Harris articulate it.
Oh, and by the way, when she came here last Friday, which nobody covered, there were more people protesting her than were people there supporting her when she came to the YMCA in Plainfield to support Lauren Underwood.
I wish they'd cover her. I want her to talk more. Kamala Harris first credentializing herself before she weighs in on the topic.
And a woman yourself.
And a woman myself.
She is? Oh.
And the daughter of a woman. And a granddaughter of a woman.
All right.
So no, she did not.
She's the daughter of a woman and the granddaughter of a woman, which, of course, prompts the question, but what is a woman? Who knows?
Oh, my God.
So anyway.
That is so embarrassing.
She has established the credentials now to weigh in on the topic of abortion because she is a daughter of a woman.
And the granddaughter of a woman.
Correct.
And she's a woman.
And now she wants you to think about your son in the context of abortion. She wants you to think about your son this way.
And when we think about it, everyone has something at risk on this. First of all, if you are a parent of sons, do think about what this means for the life of your son and what that will mean in terms of the choices he will have.
What she's saying is... you know, you have to teach your son to pressure women into an abortion if your son gets a woman pregnant, because otherwise, think about what that would mean for your son.
And the life of your son.
It's a remarkable statement she makes once you attach implications to it. And by the way, if you look at some of the survey research from women who've actually had an abortion, you will find that a majority felt pressured to have the abortion. Where is that pressure coming from? Oftentimes the boyfriend or husband, the father of the child, and sometimes the family, too. So you don't want women pressured into making decisions, right? And yet we know from the research that they often are, and we know from the vice president that that's the position of the pro-abortion left. Tell your sons to pressure that woman to have an abortion. Otherwise, his life is ruined. That's what you tell your son?
Whether you're Democrat or Republican, a lot of people want restrictions on abortions. They don't want abortions up until the day before giving birth.
Something else they want, and pro-lifers want, I should say, be specific, is they want women in crisis to be cared for. And when we come back, after we speak with Republican gubernatorial nominee Darren Bailey, I want to introduce you to, and I'll credit CBS2. I'm shocked. I'll credit Jan Alexander and CBS2 for this story on Mary Shelter in Virginia. You're going to want to hear that, but first you're going to want to hear from Darren Bailey right after this.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You've switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Here is what Governor Spaulding had to say about his opponent in the general election last night.
Let me be clear. Someone who seeks out and accepts the endorsement of a racist, misogynistic, homophobic, xenophobic, twice impeached former president does not deserve to come anywhere near this state's highest office.
Don't you even look at it.
To get reaction to that, we're pleased to be joined by State Senator and Republican gubernatorial nominee Darren Bailey. Darren, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, good morning, and thank you guys. So, been there from the beginning, and it's been a great journey, and it's only going to get better. It's just starting. Thank you.
Congratulations on your victory. So, what do you say to Governor Pritzker, who's, you know, doing what you would expect him to do, saying that Trump is a racist, so by extension you are, and all these other things, and that you know, you're not a legitimate candidate. You're scary.
Yeah, you don't care about
well.
People.
I
That's what he said.
We've been through that once. He just basically doubled the money and do it again. So this man, I mean, this is amazing how you destroy a state. And I think the people of Illinois, I think it's going to be a new day in November. I mean, I really do. Cindy and I are out every day. We're in the churches every Sunday. We've been all over the state, and people are sick and tired of what's going on. So I haven't found very few places. You know, the reality is driving across the state, whether it's in our bus, whether it's in our vehicle that's, you know, painted up with our logos on it, people ask all the time, oh, I bet you get a bunch of interesting reactions from that. Guys, when I'm up in your area, it's horn honkings. It's people pulling up with their windows down, with their thumbs up, wanting to say, you know, great job. I mean, it's been amazing, and that's been going on for over 2 years, ever since I sued Governor Pritzker and won. So there is a movement, and I wouldn't expect an out-of-touch elitist billionaire to understand that one iota. I wouldn't. So that's what's going on.
Yeah, the farmer versus the billionaire. I like it. So Jesse Sullivan, Gary Rabine, they were very gracious in their concession speeches, saying that they're going to support you. Richard Ervin was a, you know, he said that he would, but did he call you yesterday to congratulate you? Richard Ervin?
No, he did not. I have not heard anything from him. Some of the rhetoric and the conversation over the airwaves from Avery Bourne seemed to allude that they would work with us, but I heard from everyone else except Richard Ervin.
With respect to what you had to say last night, I thought it was interesting that you zeroed in on a lot of the economic issues. I mean, you talked about inflation and the tax environment here with what Pritzker attempted to do with the income tax, what he did do with the gas tax, and just the idea of being a person that understands how you have to make ends meet, and it's more and more difficult to do that under this governor.
You know, that's why we're going to win in November. I mean, I and other Southern Illinois legislators have been calling for weeks to convene into session to give immediate relief at the gas pump, of which we can do, to give immediate relief to the energy bills, of which we can do. And the problem is, when we start seeing shortages of fuel and Southern Illinois, the southern two-thirds of Illinois, which Governor Pritzker doesn't even know exists, starts having rolling blackouts and brownouts, people are going to be very upset and frustrated. And we've been warning these people. I mean, co-ops are sending out letters to their customers, and I'm talking the southern two-thirds of the state, warning them there will be blackouts and brownouts. But instead, you know, I get a notice last week after the overturn of Roe versus Wade that we're going to be convening to, you know, make Illinois a more convenient state to get abortion. So that's what this man has that's what he has on his mind. He has absolutely no desire, no care, no concern for true relief for Illinoisans, and people are going to realize that in November, because number one, we're not going to let them forget. Number two, by the time they end up literally paying the price out of their pocketbook and being without, they're going to be ready. I called the other day, first time ever in the history in my 40 plus years of farming, called for some fuel. And I was told that we could only have one load of fuel instead of the two that I ordered, because the suppliers, which my supplier is a big supplier, is already being rationed. Now, you know, I ended up getting the load a few days later, but that is the first time that I heard that word rationing. And I think we're going to see that at the fuel pump, and all of that could be alleviated from Washington, and it could be alleviated from Springfield. There's a lot we could do, but the Democrats and Biden and Pritzker, they're not concerned with that right now.
And something else you mentioned in your speech last night too, it's Biden and it's Pritzker you mentioned, but it's also Lightfoot and it's Kim Fox and it's violent crime in Chicago and to some extent in mid-sized urban areas around the state. And that's something that you're not, as governor, you know, on point, but you perhaps can help with state resources.
So absolutely. And you do, you know, you guys do this every morning and you do an amazing job. And as governor, I'm going to partner with that. And I'm going to use that platform to let people know that, you know, that there's other options. And, you know, that's what Cindy and I have been realizing as we travel the state, especially as when we are in Chicago and Cook County and the surrounding counties, people are receptive. When we're in the churches on the south and the west side and the businesses, it's almost like they didn't realize there was some people didn't realize there was another option. So when you come in with this message of hope and that there is another way, many times you're met with just an immediate kind of a wall because they've been lied to. People have been burnt. You know that, Chicago. But when we start addressing, this is why your crime is out of control. This is why you don't feel safe. This is why your schools are failing. And we can fix that. And your current attorney, your state's attorney, and your current mayor, and your most of your aldermen are ignoring that at the cost of the price of your family and sometimes your life. So that message is being received well, and the simple message that we have got to start electing honorable men and women into these positions instead of the same pay-to-play back-scratching that's taking place.
Well, I'll tell you, that message was received. We were talking in the break to Mike Scott, our newsman, and it looks like you won 100 of the state's 102 counties. Paul Schimpf won his county in Monroe, and Jesse Sullivan won his home county in Menard. But 102 counties is pretty good. If you can pull that off in the general, you're going to be in good shape. So all the counties cook in the collars. That's the important thing.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So you're going to be seeing a lot of us. We have got an amazing team already assembled. We have been getting tons of invites just to come to speak to business groups, the many ethnic groups up there, Dan. We've got the foothold. It's amazing, and we've got a lot of people, a lot of friends, a lot of groups, a lot of churches, a lot of businesses ready to partner with us to get this ball rolling. That's what I've been doing all morning, is just responding to almost 1,000 texts that I've been receiving already, and that people are ready. They're ready to go to work. They're not taking this victory lightly. They realize that the Goliath lies ahead. But I'm going to tell you just as confidently as I said 2 years ago, we're going to do this. This is going to be done, and the people of Illinois are going to rejoice here in just a few months when we have a brighter future ahead of us.
And do you think there'll be a chance where you debate Governor Pritzker?
I certainly hope so. So I would be shocked if he would deny that, and I would be interesting. I mean, I think the only thing the man could do is spew out this nonsense that has destroyed our lives while I continue to do what I've done against him, what I did 4 years ago with your help against the tax-hiking Republican in the most conservative district of the state. All I have to do is simply remind people of the truth. This is why your lives are in danger. This is why our streets aren't safe. This is why the man got burned alive in Chicago, a few weeks after I called it a corrupt, crime-ridden hellhole, because somebody was out on cash-free bail that set this person on fire. This is why your streets are unsafe. This is why your schools are failing, and this is why your taxes are so high that your friends, your neighbors are leaving the state. You're considering leaving the state, and business won't come to the state. We've got the message. It's truth. We've just got to get it out.
He is State Senator Darren Bailey, the newly minted nominee for governor, Republican nominee for governor in November. November 8th is the election. It's going to be a quick 4 months. Darren Bailey, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Bless you guys. Thanks for the help. Have a wonderful week.
You too. Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Amy, yesterday, KJP, the quadruple threat, the spokes being for the big guy, Karine Jean-Pierre, had this to say
about
the 51 dead migrants found in an abandoned truck in San Antonio.
We're focused on them, on the facts, holding the human strugglers who endangered vulnerable individuals for profits accountable. And we're focused on continuing our historic actions to disrupt dangerous smuggling networks, including through new anti-smuggling campaign that just in the first 2 months resulted in over 1,800 arrests. But the fact of the matter is the border is closed.
Border's
closed.
That happened because of Biden's policies. That's why they felt they could come over here. And by the way, that scumbag truck driver, before he abandoned them, he sprayed seasoning salt on the bodies to try and cover up the smell.
Right.
Special place in hell for him.
Well, he's going to have company, particularly with these professional prevaricators. So the border's closed. Well, I'm going to cede my time to fungible MSNBC dullard Willie Geist. Because when the message penetrates the concrete between the ears of a Willie Geist, you know it's resonating.
There was a special election just a couple of weeks ago down along a border district, a place where a Republican hadn't won in a very long time, and a Republican took that district. So there, we've talked about this with progressive pollsters, by the way, who say this idea that Latino voters in America are all in, and they have this open mind, and they'll go with Democrats wherever they go on immigration is just wrong. It's just folly, and it's not true, and it's patronizing in many ways to make those assumptions. So yeah, Democrats will have to reassess, because some of them may not want to use the word crisis, but it's exactly what it is down along the border when you have Customs and Border Patrol having 7,000, 8,000 encounters and apprehensions a day on the border. That is a crisis, and it bore its ugly teeth yesterday, Mika, when we saw the story and the images and hearing exactly how those poor people looking for a better life died in the back of a semi truck.
Yeah, Mika is so empathetic. She's so distraught about the consequences of the policy she promotes. I tell you, when you've lost Willie Geist and you're the big guy, you're in big trouble. For more on this, John Nolte, Breitbart News senior writer, joins us. John, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, good to talk to you guys. Thanks for having me on again.
So just to confirm, is Willie Geist right, or is it KJP right? What's the status of the border? Is it open or closed?
Yeah. I tell you, the thing about that comment from Willie Geist, this is the first time I heard that, is that he says Democrats have this notion that Hispanics will accept anything and vote for Democrats. Well, who the hell does he think gave Democrats that notion? It was the media. It was the Democrats, our destiny, MSNBC, NBC, blah, 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 talking points. It was the media that for years and years told us that the more Hispanics that come into the country, the more likely it is the GOP becomes a minority party. And obviously that was a lie at the time, but that's why the Democrats have opened the border. It's not a great replacement theory. It's a great replacement policy. And they still think they can win elections by flooding the country with these illegal aliens. And the consequences, as we saw, and my understanding is that the people in that truck were women. So they were probably being here to sex trafficked on top of everything else. Mm. And it's just a horror show. And everyone has been warning that something like this would happen. And it did. And everyone knew it was going to happen. And the Democrats don't care because they're all sociopaths.
Something. There's something else, though, too, about the media, not just the agenda that they're promoting, but the iconization of people like AOC. That get on, and you know, now she's a deep policy thinker that Chuck Todd spends time with, that get on and talk about impeaching Trump over passing tax cuts through Congress and so on and so forth, but are all open borders, all non-prosecution, decarceration, devotees, and the consequences at the border as well as manifest throughout America's cities.
Yeah, and these folks would be alive now if we did the right thing. If Joe Biden was a tenth as interested in controlling and protecting our border as he is Ukraine's border, these people would be alive now. This is why you need an orderly border. You want to make sure that, number one, you know the people who are coming in. But two, if you open up your border like that, you are going to have basically the Mexican equivalent of the mafia flooding our country with drugs and prostitutes, which means they're going to be put in trucks like that. They're going to be hidden. They're going to be put in very vulnerable situations. And this is all on Democrats. They have opened the border. They have told sex traffickers, bring them in because we see them as future Democrats. Or, you know, we think it's worth it. You know, they changed California. Democrats were able to complete – California was a very strong red state, a Republican gimme. And they changed California by opening their border. They knew exactly what they were doing. And they think that they can do that to the rest of the country. And the cost, the human cost, they just don't care about. They don't care about all the fentanyl that comes over the border. They don't care about all the people that die trying to get here because we lure them in with the promise of welfare and driver's license. It is monstrous what the Democrats are doing. And I don't know, this is going to change nothing. What happened in this truck is going to change nothing because they don't care about these people and they never have.
Let's move on to Roe v. Wade because obviously it feels it hasn't even been a week yet. And I feel like it's been in place for more than a month. But how did Democrats help overturn Roe v. Wade?
Well, I think they really shocked the conscience of the country, in my opinion, when everything went from safe, rare, and legal to shout your abortion. I think that was really a wake-up call. You know, what the media will never tell the people is that America was the only country in the world that guaranteed abortion through a constitutional right. All these other so-called progressive countries, it was all done democratically through their legislation. And even countries like Canada and left-wing countries in Europe, they have massive limits on abortion. You can't have an abortion after 12 weeks here and 20 weeks there. We allowed abortion right up to birth. And even after birth, if you listen to Ralph Northam talking about leaving the baby on the table as the doctor and the mother decide if they want to kill it or not. Oh. But you had for a long time abortion spokespeople. They'd come on TV and they were thoughtful and they were somber and they were solemn and they presented abortion to the public in the way that I think the public sees abortion. And that's that as an awful necessity sometimes. Well, that all changed over the last 7 or 8 years. And now you see the left, you know, no, we get to kill the baby up to birth and partial birth abortion is a virtue. And I'm shouting my abortion and Lena Dunham saying things like, I wish I had an abortion. And if you abortion shows that you're an independent woman and you're strong, they treated abortion like a tattoo. And I think that was a big factor. Another big factor was Harry Reid overturning the filibuster, which he never should have done, but he wanted to get Barack Obama's judges through. And that's the reason Trump was able to get the three justices through that finally overturned this atrocity, this legal and moral atrocity that was Roe v. Wade.
I'm loath to address the Jan 6 Star Chamber because since it is a illegitimate process, I'm not terribly interested in what it produces, just as I wouldn't be terribly interested in a illegitimate trial, the verdict from an illegitimate trial. But I do think it's interesting, given the furor over this this aide who testified yesterday, Cassidy Hutchison, that of course, she testifies and everybody runs to say, oh, my God,
Trump was
channeling his inner Dirty Harry and he tried to seize a Secret Serviceman's car. He assaulted a Secret Service officer and was going to bum rush the Capitol or some such thing. So that was the testimony. It's taken completely uncritically, even though we know this is a star chamber. There's no sort of adversarial process. There's no pushback. There's no de facto cross examination. And then NBC, Peter Alexander, reports that the Secret Service agent that's relevant here, the lead agent, is prepared to testify under oath that no Secret Service officer was assaulted and that Trump never lunged for any steering wheel in any Suburban.
I don't think it's a coincidence that on the same day that these dead migrants were found, that the Star Chamber, the January 6th Star Chamber, decided to put a witness on who they knew was lying, who was obviously lying, to completely scatter the news cycle. That is not a coincidence. It is so important to Democrats because they can see what's happening in the country. They can see the country moving against them. they know that what's coming in November is going to be something much closer to a political realignment than it is just a swapping, just a loss. And I don't think there's any question that they put her on because they needed to scatter the news cycle. They needed to get people to stop talking about this. But the real, and that's just politicians being politicians. I'll tell you a very quick story that's going to sound apocryphal, but it's true. My wife had surgery. She's fine. Everything's great, but she's in a rehab center now, and I was visiting her. And she was watching a show, and then when the show was over, she was flipping through. We don't have Fox News here because that's like having a sewer pipe in your house.
Oh,
she's flipping through.
A leaking sewer pipe. Thank you.
Yes, a leaking wide open. She's flipping through, and she flips past Fox News. And there's Bret Baier and Martha McCallum and some idiot from National Review, and they're all looking very serious. So we kind of stop at what's going on, and Bret Baier's talking about this is a game changer. This is just a huge and big. And you can see the cry on it. It says January 6th committee. My wife and I are like, what happened? And then all of a sudden, after a couple of minutes of watching, they talk about Trump trying to lunge at the steering wheel and assaulting. And my wife and I looked at each other, and we started laughing. Because obviously it's a lie. This would have come out before now. It's absurd. He can't even reach the steering wheel. But that's how demented the media are. They bought it. They bought it. They treated it seriously. Even Fox News is supposed to be different. They bought it hook, line, and sinker, and they tried to sell it to the rest of us. And they're just destroying themselves. All of them are, including Fox News. And to sit there and watch that, taking this absurd testimony seriously, absurd on it. I wouldn't believe any politician would do that. But it's just tells you how bad the media are. And the good news is that they continue to lose their influence, and this is going to hurt their influence even more.
He is John Nolte, senior writer for Breitbart News. John, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure, guys. Thank you.
Yep, I'm glad your wife's okay. And John joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. I'm going to get back to the story that we started before we spoke with Darren Bailey last hour. Kamala Harris saying that it's important that abortion be on demand because if you have a son and he knocks some girl up, you want him to be able to pressure her to get an abortion. It's a fascinating way to raise boys, but that's essentially what she said. By contrast, we've talked about this generally, but I want to be specific, and I want to congratulate CBS News, which I don't get to do very often, for this piece they did on Mary Shelter, which is a crisis pregnancy center in Virginia.
Okay.
And Jan Alexander, reporting for CBS, did a nice job, including interviewing two young women who Mary Shelter helped. What does Mary Shelter do?
Mary Shelter has several homes. It's faith-based, but they take in women regardless of their views. Now, many of the women were considering abortion, but Mary Shelter offers housing and help getting on their feet with their children for up to 3 years. The director told us it's not a solution for everyone. It's mainly for those underserved women who feel they have nowhere else to go.
Yeah, it's a solution for people that need help. It's obviously not a solution for people who don't need help. Shantae Mallory, meet Shantae Mallory, one of the people, one of the young women helped by Mary Shelter.
In 2014, Shantae Mallory lost her job. She had two young kids at home and couldn't pay her rent. When she got pregnant again, she decided to have an abortion.
It wasn't what I wanted to do. It was just at the moment, that's what everybody was telling me to do. So I feel like that was really my only option.
Then she found out about Mary Shelter.
It changed my life.
It changed your life?
It gave me a new start. I didn't have to give up or get rid of a child that I knew I wanted just because things got hard. I didn't have a support system. I had no motivation. I didn't have any kind of guidance.
Mallory, now 31 with five daughters, says Mary's shelter helped her find purpose.
I'm in Bible college studying for theology. I also am a peer recovery coach, so I help those that are battling with addictions, traumas from like sexual abuse or just past traumas.
That's Shantae Mallory.
Good for her.
Meet Logan Wilkins.
25-year-old Logan Wilkins also found Mary's shelter in a moment of hopelessness.
I was sleeping behind a dumpster at my job.
You're literally sleeping behind a dumpster?
Yes. I was literally sleeping behind a dumpster 8 months pregnant.
How were you able to survive?
It was really difficult. Sorry.
Wilkins, now a mother of four, returned to Mary's shelter for the second time last December while pregnant with her son, Leon. He is 3 months old.
I just got a new job where in the career field that I want to be in, the medical field.
So what are you doing?
I am a scheduler, but I'm getting my medical billing and coding certification in 4 months. I should be done in October.
What's the message? First Shantae and then Logan.
What's the message of your story?
That there is hope, that there are places around that can help you, that, you know, having an abortion isn't the final answer.
What about you?
Abortion isn't the final answer. There's so many other options. And to be quite honest, it is literally all worth it when you have that baby.
Kathleen Wilson is the founder of Mary's Shelter. This is what she had to say about the work that she does, that they do at Mary's Shelter and all around the country. Aid for Women and Waterleaf and other crisis pregnancy centers in Chicagoland. Same deal.
We turn no one away because we know that their situation at that moment is just that desperate.
Kathleen Wilson started Mary's Shelter 16 years ago. More than 300 women have come through their doors, some staying up to 3 years in fully furnished shared homes and apartments with their children.
We have another kitchen upstairs.
While they get parenting training and help with employment and housing.
When they leave here, that independent lifestyle becomes, you know, a real viable reality for them, as opposed to just, well, you had the baby and you're done, which is not the way any of the ministries I know work.
Mm-hmm. So we can promote this approach to life and family, or we can be the disposable society that the pro-abort left wants us to be. Choice is pretty clear.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and West Virginia versus the EPA. West Virginia v. EPA. This is a Supreme Court case that is pending. We're going to get the answer here either today or Friday because the...
Oh, yeah.
The month is up.
And Ed
the
Clarence
term is
Thomas
over.
Has got to go, get in his RV and travel.
Oh wait,
country.
No wait. What's today?
Today's June 29th.
And then there's June 30th. So it's coming today. West Virginia v. EPA.
Is that how that works? 30 comes after 29.
Well, it's right. No, so it's coming today. It's Wednesdays and Fridays.
I thought
normally
they
release opinions, but no, it's got to come today.
Okay.
And the importance of that when it comes to our not just energy policy, but the power of the administrative state. Let's start there with our friend Steve Moore, economist, author of Trumponomics, and more recently, Govzilla. Steve, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Dan. And by the way, congratulations on the big, big victory
last night
for Durham Bailey. You called that one, my friend. So.
Yeah, thank you.
He
I
created
was wrong
it.
And you were right.
No, it's all right. That's all right. Well, we'll get everybody.
He's not gloating or anything. We're all in the same team.
I'm not.
We are.
I'm
no,
not.
He's not.
Wait,
all...
you're saying Dan isn't gloating? That's not the Dan that I know.
No. Anyway. No, we got, well, obviously, we get Gary, Rabine, and who you support.
You know, I think
Gary,
you support himself greatly. Right.
Yeah,
I'm going to do it. Shout out to my friend Gary Rabine. You ran a great principled campaign, and I
sure
hope
did.
That you remain very active in politics. But now we have to beat Putzker. I mean, and
yeah.
I think he can be beat. So,
yeah.
So anyway,
let's start. So start with West Virginia v. EPA,
and
I know you're following it. So tell us the importance of this case.
Yeah. It's really important because the courts made a really bad decision. What was that, about a decade ago, Dan? What was called the so-called endangerment finding, which was that carbon dioxide emissions were endangering you know, the country. And carbon dioxide isn't a pollution. Carbon monoxide is a pollution. And so this gave a green light to all sorts of lawsuits and new regulations of our oil and gas and coal industries. It's one of the reasons that Biden has been so aggressive in shutting down American energy. And so this lawsuit, the West Virginia lawsuit, as I understand it, I'm not an expert on this, would basically rein that authority by the federal government in. And that needs to be done. And I'm pretty confident it's going to happen. I think that the decision may come actually in about an hour.
Yeah. Well, and the other aspect of this, and this is sort of wheelhouse for Brett Kavanaugh based on his previous decisions, is the power of the administrative state here, where you have
right.
Congress pass
right.
Sort of murky state language,
right. Right?
Right? And then they leave it to the administrative agencies to fill in the blanks,
yeah.
And this is where they expand their power.
Yeah. By the way, I hate the term administrative state. It's the regulatory octopus. And,
regulatory
you know,
octopus.
These are regulatory
okay.
agencies that basically you know, want to have the authority to make all, essentially make laws. And incidentally, this is a bigger point I want to make here. The massive ascent of the regulatory state, all of these ABC agencies, from the FTC to the FDA to the Consumer Protection Agency, all of these things are not even constitutional. They're making laws in these regulatory agencies. And the last time I checked, the branch of government makes the laws is the legislative branch. And so what's happened here, and this incident we're talking about right now with respect to the West Virginia case, is just an example of this, where Congress doesn't want to, you know, take the heat for making the laws. So what they've done is basically allowed these federal executive branch agencies make laws. And so more and more of the laws that are coming out at the federal level are not passed by Congress. They're passed by the executive branch. That is, in my opinion, it's completely unconstitutional.
Yeah.
And so we need to rein in these regulatory. Look, if Congress wants to pass a law that regulates carbon emissions, do it. But don't let these career bureaucrats make these these, you know, these people who are basically appointed by the Biden administration. So what's happened is every regulatory agency now has a majority Democrat on their board. So they're it's like an onslaught of new agency regulations, and Congress just sits back and twiddles its thumbs.
Yeah, you can't outsource that legislative power. That's right.
And they've done it.
And by speaking of power, energy, Austria, Germany, Italy, Netherlands announcing plans this week to resurrect old coal plants as gas supplies dwindled. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, the big guy is talking about clean energy projects. And climate change. Somebody is not living in the New Jerusalem in which the rest of us are.
Yeah, this is a great story. So, by the way, has there ever been, an assemblage of more morons than the folks who met at the NATO meeting? I mean, there is just no leadership in the world right now. You have Macron, you've got Biden, you've got, Trudeau in Canada. These are just milquetoast leaders. Where are the Winston Churchills? Where are the Ronald Reagans and the John F. Kennedys? I mean, it's so sad, or the Margaret Thatchers for that matter. I mean, these are people who just sit there. And meanwhile, you know, Russia is advancing very aggressively now in Ukraine. Incidentally, just as an aside, Dan and Amy, do you know what country in the world today has the strongest currency?
The Swiss.
No,
the Swedes.
The Russian ruble is the one that is going through the roof. And that's exactly the opposite of we thought we were going to bankrupt Russia with all these economic sanctions. Look what take a look at what's happened to the ruble relative to the dollar. It's gone up, 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 up. Now, how did that happen? Oh, gee, the Russians are exporting so much oil and gas right now to the rest of the world, including to the United States. We are basically financing their war machine, and instead of their ruble collapsing, it's the strongest currency today. Can you believe that?
Well, okay, so all right, so,
so anyway,
that is,
exactly
that is incredible.
So,
but
what,
I mean, it's the strongest the strongest currency. But just for a second on that, I mean, but by what measure? I mean, the dollar is still the reserve currency. I mean, this is
it is. But yeah. what's happened over the last 3 months, since March or so, is that the ruble has risen very dramatically relative to the dollar, and that means it's rising relative to all other currencies, because every other, you know, basically the dollar is the world reserve currency. So why is my point is that this war against American energy is just killing the U.S., but it's also financing the Russian war machine. And this story about coal is a really interesting one. Germany has moved all in on coal. Many of these other European countries have moved all in on coal. Now, guess what? There are four. If you look at the producers of coal, the U.S. has actually reduced our coal output by about 50% over the last 5 or 6 years. China has quadrupled their coal production. So we're not reducing global warming. In fact, China has dirtier coal than we do. So none of this stuff makes any sense. I'll give you another statistic, Amy. You know, after the last 5 or 6, 7, 8 years, the United States has been steadily reducing our carbon emissions, right? Because we've moved to natural gas. Guess what happened last year for the first time in 10 years? The United States actually, in Biden's first year, we actually increased our carbon emissions.
Wow. That doesn't go along with the plan, Stephen Moore.
It sure doesn't. So, and the reason is because we're using less natural gas right now because the natural gas. I mean, none of this state stuff makes any sense. It is the dumbest policy maybe in history. We're bankrupting our country. We're giving money to our enemies. We're putting American workers out of work. And we're making the environment worse. Dan, does that make any sense to you?
No, it doesn't. Something else on energy, too. And this was from a piece written a decade ago by Don Boudreau of George Mason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He and his co-author make the point, this decade ago, United States, for most of the 20th century, single market for gasoline. Today, there's a series of fragmentary regional markets, thanks to dozens of, here we go again, the regulatory octopus, regulatory requirements. Separate markets are much more vulnerable than a national market to refinery outages, pipeline problems, other disruptions. American Petroleum Institute in 2012 counted 17 different kinds of gasoline mandated across the country, which means if a pipeline break cuts supplies in Phoenix, fuel from Tucson can't be used, and so on and so forth. And so since competition is a key source for reducing price, restricting competition by fragmenting markets reduces the market's ability to lower prices. And so that's another aspect of what we're experiencing today, because the market is not anything resembling a competitive market.
And that's partly because we are not building the energy infrastructure that we need. So, for example, we need pipelines. And what did Biden do? He killed pipelines. We need LNG terminals so we can export our natural gas so that so Europe doesn't have to be dependent on Russia. But we're not building LNG terminals. And the one that I think is the most amazing is Biden waving his finger and scolding the energy companies for not refining more oil and gas when the left wing, you know, green groups that he's in the hip pocket of for the last 25 years haven't allowed us to build another refinery. We're up against the limits on what we can the amount of oil and gas we can refine, because they won't let us build the facilities that we need.
And if they, you know, spent off these oil companies spend a lot of money on those 6 refineries that are closed right now, why? Because if we're all going to green energy into electric cars, why would they waste their money?
Well, this is, of course, central contradiction of what Biden is talking about now. On the one hand, he says, quote, I'm doing everything I can to lower gas prices. And on the other hand, he's doing everything he can to dismantle American oil and gas, which means he's raising the price. And so none of the energy companies trust this guy. You know, they don't. You can't have a policy. One day you can produce gas, then the next you can't. And did you see that? By the way, did you guys see this video that's gone viral where Macron, who's hardly a free market guy, who's whispering in Biden's ear, if you haven't seen it, and he says, by the way, Mr. President, we need America to produce more oil and gas because the Saudis aren't going to do it.
Yeah.
And really?
Biden just kind of shrugs it off. But
because he didn't know what he was talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, but this is, you know, Macron is like, at least Macron is sort of like a Jimmy Carter. Like when the landscape completely changes, you gotta roll with it a little bit
as opposed to,
you know, and Biden can't even seem to figure out how to do that.
Worst president in our history.
Steve Moore, economist, author of Govzilla, How the Relentless Growth of Government is Devouring Our Economy and Our Freedom. Govzilla, Steve Moore, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Okay, see you guys. Have a great 4th of July.
You Take too. Care. Thanks. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning Answer.
On AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and want to provide another opportunity to give people to weigh in on the election results from yesterday. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. The top line, my top line is this. From Bailey on down, what you saw last night was the Republican Party electorate in Illinois rejecting, in no uncertain terms, the cowardly combine leadership of their party, signaling a new attitude with new candidates and soon to be new leadership. Because
Durkin's got some egg on his face this morning.
Durkin, McConkie, all of them. There is a disconnect, massive disconnect, between the Republican primary electorate and those persons in charge by title of the Republican Party. And by the way, some of them aren't there anymore. House conference leader, so in leadership in the House, David Welter, state rep from LaSalle Grundy County area, gone. And obviously the Irvin slate, the Ken Griffin / Richard Irvin slate went up like a Roman candle.
Yeah, not one of them made it. Thomas DeVore.
Not just Bailey, right, but DeVore.
DeVore.
DeVore for AG. Mary Miller taking out Rodney Davis. Keith Pikow in the 6th. The litany of Durkin-backed House Republican candidates that went down.
Do we have enough time in the show?
Took a hammering.
Yeah.
Dan McConkie recruited this, probably tried to play identitarian politics in Will County, recruited this candidate with a criminal history, and the Senate Republican leader's back candidate lost 80-20. Boy, if you are that far afield when it comes to candidate recruitment and race running, then I'm sorry, you're in the wrong position. And that's what we see.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
I don't want to dwell on this because now, you know, on we fight into the general. But, I mean, it is important to take stock, understand who your army is and who it isn't. Darren Bailey, as we mentioned when we had him on the show in the 6 o'clock hour, 100 of 102 counties.
He won, yep.
The only counties he lost, Paul Shimpf won his home county of Monroe, downstate, and Jesse Sullivan won his home county of Menard, downstate. The other 100 counties won for Darren Bailey in a 40-point race against four well-funded candidates, three particularly well-funded candidates, including himself. That's no easy trick.
Ken Griffin's candidate, Richard Irvin, came in third place behind Jesse Sullivan, just as predicted here on the show.
What is that, about $6 million per vote? I mean, it's not that. I'm being hyperbolic.
And he claims now during his concession speech that, you know, we don't have to play it again, but he claims that he's going to back and help Darren Bailey. Ooh.
Fine. Good. That's what he should do.
You can start with a phone call to him. He hasn't called him yet.
As I said, he was going to shatter the Ron Gidwitz record for most money spent per vote in a Republican primary, and he did.
According to Ad Impact, $114 million was spent on this primary, which makes it the most expensive primary in U.S. history. And that's money coming from both sides.
Well, there's going to be a lot more than that spent in the general election. So we're just getting started here. And I'm happy to go through the numbers. People want to talk about the matchup between Bailey and Pritzker and why this is a winnable race by the numbers. I'll be releasing a memo regarding the polling that was done by Fabrizio and Lee, my pollster, and Trump's pollster, by the way, and a longtime, well-established polling company inside the Beltway.
Was that before or after Roe v. Wade got overturned, polling?
It was before. It was the Tuesday and Wednesday of last week.
Okay.
But it gives you a pretty good survey of the landscape, and actually testing it now with Roe would give you would generate artificially high importance for abortion as compared to what I think you'll see come November, which is that it will be normally where it is, which is important to a very small percentage of general election voters, about evenly split. And it will be completely subsumed by taxes, inflation, cost of living, all of these other matters, all of these pocketbook issues.
I respectfully disagree. I think he is going to, Pritzker, he has hammered this home to the point, to nauseam. And women are pissed. I saw yesterday on full display, people with their hair on fire still, and they're going to the polls. And actually, someone I know voted for Pritzker.
Right.
Because of it.
Uh-huh. The people that are lighting their hair on fire and screeching in the streets are the same people that vote that issue, regardless of whether you have a Dobbs decision or not. You're not the long term. And by that, I mean 4 months, because that's an eternity in politics. The long term impact, I will guarantee you, and the data will back it up. It already does. Will be marginal on the election. It will be completely subordinated to these other macroeconomic issues.
Can we make a bet?
Yeah. Yes. How much do you want to bet?
$100.
How about a million?
I don't have a million.
Yeah, exactly. You do you have 100? Because I'm going to make you pay. You're going to pay.
You're not going to pass on this one. All right.
Yeah. All right. $100.
$100.
All right. Abortion will be
the number one issue for you.
That's the bet you want to make?
Oh, I'll say top two.
Abortion will be a top two issue.
November.
On the issue matrix, abortion will be top two the general election. Okay.
Yep.
Great. Anybody else want to make that bet? I could use the money. So, I could always use the money, but I don't need it, but I would like it.
The whole thing, Pritzker, you're going to lose the right to have abortions in Illinois if you vote for Bailey.
I hope he does.
I can see it now.
I hope he does.
It's already starting with that. It's a new one out today.
Yeah, I hope he does do that. So that's not what it's going to be, but if you want to believe that, you can believe that. You can believe anything you want. You could believe in the
tooth fairy too.
Believe in the tooth
fairy.
Wait,
don't tell me the tooth fairy is not real.
You can believe that the moon landing was done in a soundstage. I mean, you can believe whatever you want. That's what makes it great. It's living in a free country.
Yeah.
That's not how it's going to play out. It's going to be pocketbook issues. Now, among some, slices of the electorate, it may be more important than in other slices, but it's a funny thing. It turns out, I know, because this is talked about by the D.C. press corps, women are monolithic, suburban women are monolithic. It turns out once you start drilling down geographically and demographically, it's a lot more complicated than it's being presented by the D.C. press corps. Of course it is. Of course it is. They're using this like they're using at the macro level, Jan 6, and that we'll use at the micro level to try to close the enthusiasm gap. It's not going to work. But go ahead. Please try it. I encourage you. Jennifer and Lena, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning. I'm just looking at, some of the patterns. Illinois has lost population between 2016 and 2021, 150,000 people, but yet the active voters increased and total number of voters increased by 800,000. There's some real problems with our election system here in Illinois and elsewhere, and we need to look at that, take a serious look at it, and talk about it. I've been active with some people who are looking behind the scenes who've compiled the entire voter registration for the state of Illinois. It's in the metadata. It's not dead voters. It's, you know, poll watching is important, but it's in the metadata and it's corroborated from multiple angles. If you look at Lone Raccoon, weird name, but, you know, somebody looking at the metadata in Colorado and here in Illinois, you see some weird patterns. It looks as if they pick a loser and it's rigged. As you said, Dan, Illinois is fixed.
Okay, Jennifer, thanks for the call. John, McHenry County.
Yes, one shout out on the party leaders, local level, but the Kane County Republican Party chairman lost his reelection bid yesterday for the county board. But the biggest surprise,
Ken Shepro?
Yes, he lost.
Good.
That's just a step. Continued your pattern, but let's talk about the pattern about the Illinois Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not think I was going to wake up Wednesday morning and see that Mark Curran would win that primary. It was all about Judge Shaines or Judge Novarini. And then now Mark Curran's the nominee, and he'll be facing the associate judge Rochford in the general. And none of the four elected judges, none made it to the general, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, it is.
Your take on that?
Well, thanks for the call, John. I mean, my take is that Mark Curran has a good ballot name, but and that name has been on the ballot a lot. So, you know, having been Lake County Sheriff for a couple of terms and run for other offices, you know, in a down ballot race where you don't have a lot of money spent relative to some of these other races that we've discussed, that residual name ID that Curran had and perhaps goodwill from his time as Lake County Sheriff probably made the difference in a close race over Shaines. And, you know, I mean, I hear some of the concern about, you know, Mark not being on the bench at present. But I will say that I think Mark is an honorable guy. I think he is a God-fearing man, so he has the proper foundation. And I think he would make a fine justice. I think he'll be originalist sort of at the state level that we would like to see on that court on issues like, interpreting the pension clause of the Illinois State Constitution properly. So, you know, I'm still sanguine about that state Supreme Court race. You know, now that the nominees, I mean, I don't think Curran's been declared the victor yet. He's got about a 1,500 vote lead over Shaines, but I think there's only a couple thousand mail-in ballots left to count, so it looks like it's going to be Curran. Randy on the Kennedy.
Hey, good morning. I love your guys' show, but I was flipping through the stations last night, the television stations,
and
they had Edgar on a couple of different stations.
Of course they
did. What a piece of work that guy is. Oh, my God.
He calls himself a Republican.
He just poo-pooed everything that the Republicans did.
Yeah, of course. Of course. You mean
why does he despise the party so much?
Are you talking about J.B. Pritzker's debates coach, Jim Edgar? That Jim Edgar? Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for the call, Randy.
What the heck happened to him?
He's a combine politician. Why? Because you think because he doesn't drink, he's some honorable guy? He's a political hack. He always has been. He was a terrible governor, not a good governor. Pension ramp, tax increases, in addition to, of course, being completely absent in terms of providing any moral leadership, rhetorically or otherwise. I mean, I guess, except for being a teetotaler and having good hair, that's good enough for the Chicago Press Corps. It's not good enough for me, and it's not good enough for Republicans in 2022. And Jim Edgar can crawl back into his crypt now because he's a, he's a mummified Republican from another epoch.
Yeah.
Irrelevant. The Chicago Press Corps, not your friend. Chicago Political Press Corps, not your friend. Darren Bailey, rest of you Republicans. The Springfield Political Press Corps, not your friend.
No.
What is complicated about this? You work around them, and the great news is they're increasingly about as relevant as Jim Edgar is. They're only a delivery mechanism for and one available communication channel for political candidates so that you know, they stay on the air. It's sort of a Machiavellian deal that you have to make to broadcast and to penetrate a message. But in terms of like what these teleprompter readers on the network affiliates are saying, or what these hacks they come in, these Republican quislings they bring on to pretend like they're giving you some great insight into what's happening in the Republican Party or what the options are, or how to win elections against Democrat socialists. They have nothing to say that is germane, that is evidence-based. It's just their personal feelings. They're just projecting their personal feelings. Okay, fine. So just call it for what it is and then make your own decisions. Who cares, Jim Edgar? Where's George Ryan? Why don't they break George Ryan on? He was a hero suspending the death penalty for the moratorium of the death penalty. He's still around. Get George Ryan on there to be a pundit, too, while you're at it. Who else we got? Where's Bruce Rauner? Bring Bruce Rauner back.
I haven't seen Bruce Rauner.
And you're not going to.
Key West.
And you're not, you're not going to.
Text messages. What? And it's all in capital letters. What were the results of the 9th District Cook County Commissioner's race Republican ticket?
Podgorski won in a blowout.
Pogorski won in a blowout.
To replace the retiring Silvestri, yeah. No, he's got a general election, but yeah.
But he should win that, don't you think?
He should. Bill on the north side.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
Hi. I wonder how if Governor Pritzker is going to say, well, I gave money to the Bailey campaign because he's a better candidate, or I want to destroy Illinois because if you give it to your opponent, you're put yourself into jeopardy like that.
He didn't give any money to Darren Bailey. And again, hopefully the last time, there's nothing novel about somebody who's an incumbent with unlimited money trying to influence who their opponent is when there's a competitive primary on the other side. It goes both ways. It's not novel. So the performative hysterics over this are really tiresome. And number two, I don't know why any Republican would start from the premise that that J.B. Pritzker, who is otherwise characterized as out of touch and so on and so forth, has some keen insight into what the best matchup is for him. I would go on to add that, as I said many times, there was never any data presented in support of these arguments made by other candidates that they were a better matchup to J.B. Pritzker than is Bailey, because there is no numbers. There are no numbers to present to make that case. And I do have the numbers, and it is a competitive race, and Bailey can win it. And as I was mentioning before, I'll be putting a memo out regarding this polling today for everybody to consume, so that, including among the donor class, they don't buy into this claptrap that they've been fed that it's an unwinnable race because we have somebody that I don't identify with as our nominee, and so I'm just going to throw up my hands and concede defeat. Well, you can do that if you're some effete country club Republican. But that's not where the energy is in the party. And there is, because of that energy and because of what's been done at the federal level, there is ample opportunity. And I will just again mention that Trump and Biden, one candidate lost the state by 17 points. The other candidate won the state by 17 points in 2020. They have exactly the same approval rating. So for as much as Spalding was prattling on about Trump yesterday. Oh, Bailey's Trump, and anybody who takes Trump's endorsement is
homophobic,
not worthy of the office, and so on and so forth. 43-56, both Trump and Biden are upside down in this state. So Biden is as much an anchor as Trump is among different segments of the electorate, obviously. And that's not the only anchor around the neck of Spalding. He's got a couple others named Lightfoot and Fox that will be addressed before November 8th rolls around.
Do you think people want to continue living like this? I don't.
Jordan in Antioch.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy. In comment to what you just said about the people thinking, trying to pick running mates, last night I did watch briefly on the news. They were going over the results.
And I heard a lot about the amount of money that Pritzker spent to drive down Irvin because he wanted to run against Bailey. And I, something about that, I don't think, and I'm thinking just simply, but I don't think that's right. I think that's a friend of the friend of my enemy is my friend. I think he did a public, huge demonstration of how much he didn't want Irvin. And I think he's smart enough, and the people around him are smart enough to know how much this state can't stand him, that by showing he didn't want Irvin, I think he was trying to drive people to support the one that he didn't like. I think he's definitely afraid to run against Bailey. I think he's afraid to run against a real person with real accomplishments, with real people supporting him, with real successes. And I think he's definitely afraid to face this man in the thing. And if, can I make a quick comment about the Supreme Court case real quick?
Yeah.
That we're waiting on? Mm-hmm. So the other thing, I know that's the EPA, but that's all administrative, right? And I think there's a lot of people, I know the National the Second Amendment Foundation is watching this, and so is the NRA. If they deem that the EPA can't rule by edict and by mandate, that is going to completely gut the ATF. I hope everybody is aware of that and keeps their eyes on that, because most of the things that you see that are quote-unquote laws and punishable are not laws. They are edicts by the ATF and are not done through legislation. So that's going to be, if they rule in favor of that, in fact, that is going to be huge. But like I said, I think Pritzker tried to punish Irvin, trying to drive people to support the one that he didn't like, and I think he's definitely afraid to face Bailey. I'll hang up and listen to your comments. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Jordan.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Please bring your seats into an upright position and secure your trays, because inflation is coming to commercial airlines. Competition for pilots is fierce, report in the Wall Street Journal. An American Airlines subsidiary recently announced a 50% pay increase through August of 2024.
Wow.
United is trying to keep up with competitors with its new pilot contract that includes a 14.5% raise over the next 18 months. It also creates a new 8-week maternity leave benefit, improves long-term disability benefits, enhanced overtime, tax-advantaged retirement plan. But the problem is, with the CPI at 8.6%, that 14.5% raise amounts to about 1.6% in real dollars over 18 months. For pilots who live in the Sunbelt area where inflation is running hotter than 10%, such as Phoenix, it's actually a decline in real wages if inflation stays where it is through next year. So what does that mean for air travel? You know, the impact of the cost of doing business for air travel and the cost of accessing air travel. For comment on what is happening and what is poised to happen, pleased to be joined again by Robert Mark, former senior editor of Flying Magazine, now the publisher of Jetwine. Jetwine, that's W-H-I-N-E, jetwine.com. Robert, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for inviting me.
So what of this pilot shortage and what the carriers are doing to try to address it?
Well, you know, it's the old supply and demand thing. But honestly, the airlines brought much of this down on themselves. A couple of years ago when we had the pandemic, the management at most of the major airlines kind of went through a scare tactic. Not a scare tactic, but they were worried beyond belief that they were going to have too many people sitting around doing nothing, and they offered a lot of people early retirement, and they laid off people, even though they were getting a lot of money from the government, but they still ended up getting rid of pilots. And then 6 months later, they said, you know, maybe we overdid this, and they've been playing catch up for the last 18 months, and they still aren't there.
Well, Well, I mean, when you're talking about 50% pay increase over the next 2 years, I mean, how, you can't increase labor costs like that and have that not translate into the prices that consumers are paying.
Oh, absolutely. And consumers think the prices are bad now, and they haven't even hit the elements of these contracts yet. So where is this going to go? I don't know, but it just doesn't sound good at all. I mean, and the worst thing is that I think consumers are concerned about buying a ticket, even if they pay a higher price. Am I going to get there?
Right. That's what I'm going through right now. American Airlines just up and canceled our flight to Orlando late last night, and I'm traveling with myself and my two kids, and the flight plan they have to even get in, it's like, why? They knew that there was a crew shortage, so why even schedule the flight in the first place?
Well, see, that's the part that I do not understand. I mean, why not just take the plunge, reduce the schedule, and say, look, right. I'm sorry, we don't have four flights a day to Orlando. We only have one. And if you get on it, though, you know you're going to go. But they keep doing this. It's like shooting yourself in the foot.
But when's it going to end? I mean, how long do we have to live like this is the question.
Well, that's the golden question because, you know, the airlines, I mean, some of the regionals of American have dozens and dozens of airplanes sitting around because they can't crew them. And, again, you can't just make a pilot. I mean, it takes time. And that's one of the elements that the airlines are looking for ways to go around, except there are no go-arounds.
Let's talk about that, because one of the reasons I wanted to have you on was this interview in The Atlantic that Derek Thompson did of Scott Keyes, who I guess writes a newsletter, Scott Keyes Cheap Flights or something like this. But he, in this interview, he said one of the front and center issues discussed in the airline industry right now is this question of pilot training. Is 1,500 hours the proper amount of airtime we should be expecting from pilots before we certify them to fly commercial jets? He goes on to say, on the one hand, it's easy to say you can't be too careful. But on the other hand, the U.S. is a bit of an outlier. Most other countries do not require anything near this level of training ahead of being certified. And the U.S. historically has not required that level of training. And we let foreign pilots fly into JFK and other major airports without this requirement. So is there something that could be done on the threshold level of required training without jeopardizing, you know, obviously safety first and foremost? What do you think?
Well, of course, this 1,500 hours is kind of an arbitrary number to most travelers. But what it actually is it's the threshold at which a pilot can qualify for an airline transport pilot rating, which is kind of the PhD of piloting. You know, you start out with a private and a commercial and all that kind of certificates, but an ATP is what is required, and you have to have 1,500 hours in order to qualify for that. So years ago, I don't know, 5 years ago or whatever it was, the FAA decided through Congress that they were going to require an ATP of everybody that flew on a commercial airline. And that's what's different here in the U.S. compared to other countries. Now, the point is, other countries seem to be getting along just fine with what they consider qualified people sitting in the right seat of an airliner. However, this didn't happen easily here in the States. There was a Colgan Air Continental Express airplane that crashed in Buffalo, oh, I don't know, it's probably 10 years ago now, a little more than that. And it, the families just raised such, you know, put so much pressure on Congress about, you know, whether they thought the crew was qualified or not, that they demanded this ATP rating for everybody. And the strange part of that accident was that both of these pilots had more than 1,500 hours. But again, the 1,500 hours is an arbitrary number.
Well, I remember I remember one of the things they said about that, the complaint was these were low paid pilots. You know, and so the idea, like, if you said, so it's important, your point about that. Well, they had that threshold level of training anyway, but they were low paid too. So that somehow,
that's
if they're
right.
low paid, that means they're not qualified or they're not safe pilots, which is, you know.
Well, it doesn't necessarily. I mean, if I told you some of the dollar figures that some of us worked for years ago,
right.
people would laugh. But, you know, we did what we did. We knew what we were doing, and we took the jobs. But the trouble was is that at the Colgan Air accident, these people were both commuting. Airline pilots can fly on their own company airlines or sister carriers for free if there's an empty seat when they want to get to work. So they had to travel. I think the captain came up from Florida, and the first officer came out of Seattle to get to New York. Well, that's a lot of traveling, and they did it overnight, and they were pretty tired when they started flying, and they had a long day, and they just got complacent. They did. I mean, they had some idle chatter in the cockpit. And they weren't paying attention to what was going on,
mm-hmm.
and the airplane got away from them.
Mm-hmm. Well, so then, I mean, if there's not anything that is politically palatable on the and sort of the threshold to be put in the cockpit, the number, the required training, then we're just saying that what you're describing, what Amy's describing with her personal experience, that's just going to be the normal for a while.
I'm afraid it is until the airlines get their act together. And Amy had the practical answer right there. Hey, if you don't think you're going to have the crew to fly the airplane, don't list the damn flight. I mean, because there is nothing. And I feel for you, Amy. There's nothing worse than getting to an airport with little kids who probably want to go you know where in Orlando and saying, we can't go. In fact, we've got to go home. But after sitting there for 2 or 3 hours, maybe.
Right.
I mean, maybe the fares are high and people are going anyway, but there's going to be a lot less people traveling, and the airlines are going to be screaming bloody murder pretty soon.
Well, I think Bezos or Richard Branson or somebody's going to have us in flying cars soon enough. So maybe that'll be the solution.
Yeah, I don't know. But plan to put up with an awful summer, I think.
He is Robert Mark, former senior editor at Flying Magazine, publisher of Jetwine. That's Whine, jetwine.com. Robert, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for inviting me.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.